This is fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
Beef!
You've all made a horrible mistake. No.
I'm something something Philip J. Duncan, and tonight we have with us The Beef. Hello, The Beef.
Hey, everybody. How's it going today?
Our guest tonight is our friend Nick Lischko, who is an author, a podcaster, a romantic comedy movie star, amongst many other things.
So they say.
And he is The Beef.
Glorious.
We met Nick at Superstars a few years ago. I'm trying to remember how it went exactly. I remember when we signed up for the dinner, they gave us these little cards that had like whether you chose beef, chicken, fish, or vegan or whatever.
That's
and if
right.
If you chose beef, you had this little card that had a picture of a cow and it said beef. And I think the whole thing was, did you put it in your badge and like flip your badge around that way? Is that what it...
You know, the mystery method, which I learned about on VH1 many years ago, talks about peacocking. And so I thought to myself, this will be one way to peacock to others that I am just as strange as they are. And it will be a simple icebreaker. And so that's what I went with.
And now you were forever known as Beef.
Beef. Well, it's funny because when I saw you at the conference, I was like, Philip, which is how Lil says it in Rugrats. So it's like, hello, Philip. But I think we all met. I think I just sat down next to Julie one day, and I think you were all just in that row. I think that was back in 2022, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds accurate.
Julie Jones bringing us all together.
Julie Jones, the world famous Julie Jones.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait to read her book.
She's been on twice now.
Twice, eh?
Three times, maybe.
Maybe three.
She might have been on three times. She's been on a lot. Shout out Julie Jones. Yeah. All right, Nick Lischko, what have you been working on?
My goodness. I am getting ready to release book three in my John Little young adult fantasy series. I have two beta readers. One is my younger brother who got me back into reading after giving up in high school. And the other is a girl named Rose on Fiverr who is insanely good at giving notes and constructive feedback. And she just needed to stretch her time limit out. So I'm waiting for her notes. I should get them on Friday. And then we got to crush this draft, the final draft. And that gets published. I'm thinking April 5th is the pre-order date that I set with Amazon. And I cannot break it because this will be the third strike and I can never do pre-orders again. So that for sure has to go on that day. In addition to that, I am dictating the fourth book in that series. I'm outlining the fifth book, and I am working on dropping a surprise novel on Christmas Eve because Brandon Sanderson won't stop doing it.
You're going to try to copy Brando?
You could do a talk on how to drop a secret book. I think that'd be a great talk at Superstars since he just did it again.
Hey, I could do that right now because so we're recording this on Wednesday. It won't air until Monday. I have a book releasing tomorrow, and I haven't told anyone.
Congratulations. You don't have a newsletter, Phil. That's basic.
That's not true. I did tell all the people in my newsletter, but those are like, you know, readers, people who might actually buy it, that I want to buy it, you know.
My newsletter is full of family and friends who just continue to confuse the Amazon algorithm.
Because that's exactly why I've told no one.
You like Nick Lischko, John Little from the Shadows. You might also be interested in diapers and grill mats. Great. This is exactly not what Mark Dawson teaches.
My newsletter has four people I know in real life. No, wait, no. There's a fifth now because there's one of my author friends is on there.
Nice.
But like, it's got four people who I actually know, and all of them, if they go buy it, are actually the right people to go buy it. So
okay.
I'm totally okay with them knowing, but I've not told, like, I haven't told my mom. I haven't posted it on Facebook. I haven't like told anybody for that very reason. Like, I don't, mm-hmm. I appreciate the support. I don't want it.
And this is what I'm working on after we talked about it at lunch, you know, way back at Superstars 24, that I have to work on getting a Shopify store set up so that the folks who are just keep buying my book are buying the paperback, which is an amazing problem I never thought I'd have. I have a box behind me of just the first two books that I get messages on Facebook and through the newsletter and even at work now, because work has a Facebook, which I can't name, but it's like a Facebook for work, and people ask for autograph covers. So I charge them $20. I do the shipping and handling myself. And I, you know, write a special note and all of them. I always ask them to please get on the newsletter, because these are the folks who are reading Young Adult Fantasy, and I want more Young Adult Fantasy people. But, you know, it's just my mother will reply back to all of my newsletters. That's great, boy. Keep up the good work. Let me know if I can buy your book. Thanks, man. So that's and that was my big priority as Superstars, right, was just breaking free of that friends and family hug and getting to a fan base. Yeah. And I got so much great info from Katie Cross and Nick Thacker, Craig Martell, and then – can't think of that fourth person on that panel who talked about indie guerrilla marketing, but that was all super helpful. So I'm still, I have a huge note of just all of my takeaways from Superstars. I'm gradually going through my checklist and knocking out all of the takeaways. So I have like 13 things to do still.
I guess we should explain that a little bit just for anybody who doesn't know, and why I'm being a jerk about like, I don't want my friends and family to know. It's so this is for the indie crowd, and people who have experience with indie will know this. But when you put a new book out on the Zon, basically the way Zon treats any product is they want to sell it. They want to sell it to people who are looking for a similar product, right? And so if you put out a new young adult fantasy novel, you market it effectively and you get people who read young adult fantasy to go buy it, Amazon will go, aha, we know who to sell this to. If your mom who buys kitten mittens gets on there, they're going to think that your book is Kitten Mittens, and that's what they're going to try to sell. They're going to try to sell it to the kitten mitten crowd rather than the young adult.
Do they have those?
No, I know they don't.
Kitten Mittens?
We should see if they actually do exist. This is from, did you ever watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
No, I have not. I saw the first season, and then I jumped ship to Parks and Rec, but
there was a video that Charlie Kelly did where he's like, invented kitten mittens. He does this funny little commercial or whatever. It's like, is your cat making too much noise?
They are real. They are a thing now.
Is it from the itsalwayssunnystore.com? Is that what it is?
No, these are on Amazon. Apparently kitten they're mittens. To prevent scratching.
Oh my gosh. They make those for babies. I learned that they have baby mittens for all the times they scratch their face, but I didn't know they had kitten mittens. But yeah, so that, like you said, that is exactly right. And that is what we talked about a little bit. This is what happened with my first two books, is that a number of people bought the paperbacks and I'm recommended to literally nobody else. Amazon does not know what to do with my books. And so I'm trying to break away from that by having the paperbacks go over to my website and then ebook exclusively to Amazon, which is not selling at all. But, you know, I'm going to get to that book club video. I've got all the notes for that. So I have a plan. That's the plan.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. To this point, what I've done, what I still do, because I haven't set up like any kind of special store for friends and family. I just am like, if you want one, let me order it for you. And then I can circumvent the sales channel, right? And I can go order copies and do all of that. But yeah, you don't want it to get polluted. And the newsletter, I think, is of almost equal importance. Mm-hmm. I have honestly, even the four friends who are on there, I've almost kicked them off like 3 times. And one of them, at least one of them, listens to the podcast and will hear me say that and be like, how dare you? But JH has stopped me each time because, and it's okay that they're on there because, like I said, they actually read the kind of stuff I write anyway. But if any of my other best friends signed up for my newsletter, I'd probably kick them off because it's not for them, right? It's for my readers. And, you know, that list is growing. And that makes me happy. And I just try to do a fun newsletter for them every month. And so they know, like I put the cover of the new book, great, big, huge, blew up the whole screen. Like it's time. Cause they've been waiting a few of them have been waiting for a while on this one. So
that's awesome. Well, I think the thing with the newsletter, I also do once a month. I still haven't done the March one because for anyone that does read Young Adult Fantasy, I'm going to do my first ever 1 day sale. There is an amazing indie author whose name I botch every time I say it. I think I'm going to do it again. But Alana Jacobs, I think is her name, or Elena Jacobs. But she is a cozy coastal romance and cozy Western romance author. And she has all of these great books about writing rapidly, writing to market. And then her big thing with sales is to have a 1 day sale. And that's where she makes the bulk of her profits. So I'm working on doing an ebook sale once book three comes out for 1 day. Book one will be 99 cents, book two will be $2.99, and book three will be $4.99. So I'm going to do that for 1 day on April 5th only. So that's why I haven't sent the newsletter yet, is because I want more real people on there.
So it's interesting. So does she do like a countdown deal for that one day deal? So she can. Set
I think
it
she does.
Cents?
She's got a. She's got an insanely healthy newsletter. I will send you one of her 20 books talks because she really cracked open a lot of things for me as far as releasing strategies. She did one strategy where it was release two books the same day, release a book a week, release a book a month, which is the one she sticks to is once a month. But this is a gal who, I mean, she has like 190 titles over 11 years. It's crazy
wow.
how
that's
much she
phenomenal.
Writes. So, and yeah, they're just, that's a lot of what being an indie author is, you know, copying and stealing what other people are doing and then molding it to the genre and to what readers' expectations are.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying
to
do.
And I found a lot of it is like, there's a lot of people in the indie space who are willing to share what they're doing, but it might not work for you perfectly. So you have to like tinker with it and find your version of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is a lot of the advice, and I hope no one gets upset with this, but a lot of the advice I get is from romance authors who have a built-in kind of NSFW audience. And of course they're hungry for their stuff. And of course they make $100,000 a month. And that stuff does not translate over to ages 12 and up young adult fantasy readers so much.
It doesn't translate to family-friendly fantasy.
Not so much. Not so much. I think a lot of people rely on Kindle Unlimited for numbers and page reads. And I think I just for the first time broke 500 page reads in the history of my publishing just from these last 2 months. So,
nice.
Yeah. So, but I'm just a baby author, man. It's all coming along.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still exploring and figuring things out. And that's also why, like, I haven't gone and I, you know, we talked about some of the things I was doing, but I haven't gone into great detail on the podcast. And the reason for that is like, so especially once I went to Superstars and started talking to people and I was like, yeah, this is what I did. And I expected, there's a lot of people there who have way more experience than me. And I figured they'd be like, oh, well, you could have done this, this, or this, or this, and made it even better. Instead, every single person I talked to was like, you did what and how did you do it? And I was like, oh no. Like, I'm glad.
Oh, not because they're interested, but because you did something wrong.
No. More like, oh no, I've stumbled on something that's working specifically just for me right now. And it's not that I don't want to share it, but like I told a few people at Superstars and at least one of them has tried to replicate what I was doing and it's not working.
Okay.
And gotcha. So that was my fear. Like, I don't want to go on my podcast and be like, do this, this, and this. I'm the expert. And then have people messaging me like, hey, I just lost $1,000 on your stupid idea.
I too will lose $1,000 on your idea because I think I know which idea you're talking about. I think that's the fun thing about being an indie author. And we could talk a bit about Trad too, just because that was a route that I looked at. And because of my experience in Hollywood, I completely avoided. But when you're going down the indie rabbit hole, there's not a lot you can do wrong. Except yep. offend absolutely everybody, in which case have a pen name moving forward. But I mean, just from the conversation that you had with me at lunch about how you had those books for a number of years and then you started doing this other thing and then boom, you started mm-hmm. getting some sales there. I think that, and Craig mentioned this too a couple of weeks ago, there's not a lot that you can do wrong, especially with just starting off. Try different genres, move mm-hmm. about different places, posting different spots. There's a lot of things that you can try. And so it's kind of fun to be in that pool. It's kind of fun to like have almost endless options. I mean, I had one girl, she read my book and she did a book report on it for school. And I was going to go into the classroom and have books ready to go. But then the teachers got switched like within a month and then they just turned in their assignments and nobody had anything to go. So I didn't get to do that opportunity. But one thing I did do that was different is we have a free library in the neighborhood and I dropped off a signed copy of the book. I mean, within 3 hours it was gone and it has not been returned since. So I'm hoping to do something like that again, post on Nextdoor, just try more social things, as much free advertising as I can do. So there's not a lot you can do wrong because it's all we're all just trying together, I guess.
When we had a fun conversation last week, our guest was a musician we know, you know, and it was talking about like she's getting ready to publish her first thing. And it's like the whole cross promotional things, you know, like JH did her last book that came out. She did it in conjunction with her album release, her first album.
What was that experience like as far as did the fans react a different way? Did you get more? Did you get less? Like, what was that like?
It's a good question because it was also the first the self-published book I'd done without like anyone else owning a piece of it. Cause, my first five novels were all with a small press. The next two were with, is the Music the Gathering books. And so it's I wrote them, but it's also the bands, you know, they're the characters, they own the IP to their characters. They're the ones, you know, taking it and selling it. So this one was the first book that was completely mine. So that was different just by itself, not even adding the album on top of it.
Was that Jack of Crows? Thing. Is that right?
Yes.
I love, freaking love that cover. It's so good. Who did the artwork for that, if you're allowed to say?
Yeah, his name is Aaron Moschner. And what's funny is I actually came across him because he works with one of my aunts in Arkansas. And she had recommended because he was, you know, wanting to write a short story. And so then he was reaching out to me for that. And then, But yeah, he did a great job.
And you're doing it wide. Is that right?
Yes, that one is wide. I wanted to give that a try and see how it would differ. And yeah, I wanted to be able to do something different with that one because I definitely believe in experimenting and figuring out what works.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
Very cool.
But yeah, Aaron did the album art as well, which was really fun. But I would definitely say if I do that again, I would probably take my time and make sure I have everything done beforehand because those last few months were super stressful. I'm trying to make sure every single thing for both the book and the album were done before release. It's like it's bad enough with just one of those, but I had two that I had to get to the finish line.
Oh. I'm kind of playing a similar game where I mean, book three isn't completely done. I'm waiting on two. I'm waiting for the notes like I talked about, and then I'm just going to do a mad rush, edit it, and then publish it. Although I do hear people get things done ahead of time and just have it done. I don't think you both
Weird.
Met Steve. I can't say his last name. Pinzecki? Yes. I met him, when I had talked a conversation with him last year, I was like, how's the fantasy series going? He goes, all the books are already done. Yep. I'm like, what is that like, Steve? You mean that's it's not 4 days before and you're trying to finish? Like,
that's actually my plan for the rapid release series I'm going to do for that exact reason. Because I know life is going to happen. Something's going to come up and it's going to cause a delay and I'm going to be so upset. So like, I'm just going to write the entire series, get it completely done, and then we'll pull the trigger.
Do you have a plan for when you want to release that? Is that this year or early next year? Or?
Oh, it's going to be next year at the earliest because I have to finish writing all of them. So, yeah.
I mean, in fairness, you kind of have to start writing them.
Just procrastinate. It's the best.
What do you mean start?
Well, I know you started, but didn't you say you were going to have to go back and redo them all?
So I've wrote books one and two, and I was in book three about, I don't know, 80% done. And then I was struggling a bit and decided I wanted to add in some more world building and then maybe change a few other things. And the biggest change I decided was I was going to switch from third person to first person for entire series. So I'm back at
basically
book one
starting over.
And I'm keeping some of the previous like scenes and things that happened, and I'm tweaking it and I'm adding new stuff, but then I'm able to kind of reuse some of the previous chapters I already wrote. So it's kind of a weird mixture of writing and editing. And yeah,
I would paste it into ChatGPT and just ask chat to switch it over to third or first person.
And then write me seven more books like this.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, AI.
No.
Well, I think it was the podium talk. Matt Dinneman said that he writes all of the Dungeon Crawler Carl books in second person. And then when he goes back, he switches it over to first.
Really? Wow.
So, yeah.
That's interesting.
That sounds horrible.
That's quite the tactic. That's what I thought, Phil.
Yeah, because you'd have to do that one at a time. Like, you couldn't just be like, oh, find all the U's and change them to I's. Because, like, sometimes a U is in the object position or whatever. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a one at a time fix.
We met Matt, and he was really cool, liked him, hung out with him, everything. Mm-hmm. I meant to tell you about this, JH. I just saw something that made me, like, have so much respect for his craft the other day. It was a Facebook group about reading.
Okay.
And somebody was talking about one of his books on there. And this person was saying that, effectively, there's a point where the character has to fight this boss or whatever. And the boss is speaking in Spanish.
Okay.
And so it's like this big, horrible, ugly monster thing, I guess. And this is how the person was described. I haven't read it, so I don't know. But it says like this big, ugly monster thing is how it's described. And it's speaking in Spanish and they kill it. The main character's like, I don't know what it said, but I'm kind of glad because I'm sure whatever it was saying was horrible. The person who was describing this said they went and looked up translations for everything that that character was saying. And it was like begging for mercy the whole time.
Oh, no. That's so good.
Dang. That's so brilliant.
Oh,
he's good.
Oh, it's horrible.
He talked a bit about his Patreon, where he will actively write chapters with the people on Patreon. And he said he'll always give them a choice of how, you know, is he going to be successful? Is he not going to be successful? He goes, and they always screw me. And I thought, I don't have a Patreon, but should I be screwing myself constantly? Screwing John Little, making his life even harder? And I should. I should. That's, I mean, that story structure is chase your character up a tree and throw rocks at them.
I've never been nice to mine. It pays off.
Oh, Butcher. Poor Dresden.
Hey, I sold a book since we've been talking.
Hot data damn! Okay, nice. Now I have to see if I've sold a book. The answer is probably no, but let's find out.
Phil, I was going to say we were talking about mistreating characters, and for some reason, because you've complained about it so much, Jack now comes to my mind.
Yeah. You abused that poor scarecrow endlessly, selfishly, and terribly.
Oh, I sold the book 3 days ago. Perfect. There we go.
Close enough.
Close enough. A victory is a victory. My only goal this year is to sell 100 books. My goal last year was one book. My goal is 100 this year. So anything past 100. That's over the moon.
You can sell 100. Yeah, you got this. That's not a problem. You got this.
That's what Nick Thacker said. He said, for year one, sell one book, make $1. That was my only goal. And so I have an Excel sheet of just like cascading goals because I have like a 17-year plan to stop working in corporate. And like each year is just more books, 100, 5, you know, 100, 200, 500, and so on. So, and then above my board, I have SMART goals taped to the wall just to remind me when I'm having a bad meeting, like, going to get out of here. In 17 years, Red, I'll be gone. You'll see.
All right, so tell me about long walks on the beach. What is this?
Sure. So I would say first and foremost, I want to make movies more than anything, and I still do. Ever since I was 8 and I saw Back to the Future, I always want to make movies. When it comes to writing, I learned my trade in screenwriting first. I started writing scripts late into high school, early into college. I went to screenwriting conferences while I was in college. I pitched to Brett Ratner's production company. I almost got repped back in 2009. I've been cranking out scripts for a long time. I made something called The Hit List back in 2014 for a script that I wrote called Henchman, about a henchman that lives next door to Superman, is going to expose him and climb the corporate ladder of henchmen. And that almost got bought. It was super close. A lot of producers from The Amazing Spider-Man were like super into it. We were looking at casting, and then it kind of fell apart when another movie from Canada called Henchman came out, and that kind of killed the motive in mind. But I have been repped. I'm writing a script right now. And after so many years of writing scripts, I just started to get really exhausted. I have like 9 unproduced features, and 4 of them I think are absolutely perfect and should be bought. They just cost $200 million to make, and it's hard to justify that risk on a new author or a new screenwriter. But I was watching Mark Duplass. Do you know who that is?
Mm-mm.
So the Duplass brothers are indie darlings. They're these brothers from Austin, Texas, and they started making shorts for like $1 on the weekends, and then they gradually started making features. And they started kind of building a following and getting more and more attention in Hollywood, and their stuff has been in Sundance, and they both have had shows on HBO. And he gave a talk at South by Southwest all about just looking around what you have and filming something and just making it for fun and just doing it for you, because I had done so many projects that were kind of for me, but mostly for the reader, which is the person under the producer who reads the scripts and try to get their boss to, you know, be impressed and buy them. And so from all of that, I was working one night and I was just like, I'm going to shoot something. I'm so tired of not having anything to show for literally a decade of writing movies and TV pilots that I want to just film something. And so I looked around what I had in Denver, and I wrote a romantic comedy called Long Walks on the Beach. It's a 7-episode web series. All of it combined makes a feature-length film, and the last episode is a full, true television episode. And it was a chance for me to really CA project from beginning all the way to the end. I broke it in the room one night because I was on second shift. So another guy in the room that I wrote and directed it with, his name's Kyle Peterson. We both want to be filmmakers. And so we just started talking to people. And one guy just gave us like $6,000. And he goes, go make this. And so we bought all sorts of equipment. We rented out spaces. We found other kids that were hungry in film school that wanted to just make good stuff. And we got a cinematographer and like an $8,000 camera set up on the basis of the script alone.
Nice.
For the writing. And so then it became production management and finding free places that we could shoot and just asking people. And that's what that became. And so we finished that web series. The COVID times, because it was going to come out in 2020 and then the COVIDs happened. And then we never could get any of our actors to like record because a lot of them moved away and some of them went to Hollywood and some got on Hulu shows and some are working in the industry now. And so we couldn't redub the audio, but we finished what we had. And then January 2021, we just started releasing all the episodes in succession on Vimeo. We got a couple of good praises at film festivals. We won a couple of awards. Nice. And now it's just on YouTube. And it's a nice calling card. And it's something that I can say, like, yeah, I did this from start to finish. Like, an hour and 35 minutes of, like, good story. So, and then I had to be in it because the dude who was supposed to be the character that I ended up playing, like, bailed the day before. So, because we did not pay our cast and crew, but we fed everybody very, very well. Thank you, Costco. And that's what that is. It's just a web series. So you can watch the whole thing for free on YouTube. Friends that I've made there are friends that I still have today. And that's like my little filmmaking calling card for writing, directing, and producing and acting, I guess.
That's cool. Nice. Did you know? Yeah. So this explains why your podcast is called Cinema Gush.
Yeah. I think that was also birthed out of like just being bummed at COVID all the time. And I called my buddy and I was just like, can we just like have a happy podcast? He's like, yes, absolutely. And that's the podcast, is like, we just have people on and we just talk about the movies that they love. Specifically, they'll pick one movie and it's like, you know, there's that movie that you love that you're like, I could go on. Well, that's what this podcast is. It's like, well, keep going then. Yeah, just keep going. Keep going until you have literally nothing else to say about this film. And we're in our, I think we're in our fifth season right now. So yeah,
oh, nice.
Still having a good time. We just did an Oscar one last week and we're going to shoot Dune 2 tomorrow. Nice. What I saw last night. It was very good.
It was good. Yeah, we went last weekend. It was very good.
Nice.
There is... I almost didn't want to say this because I don't know what it's called, which is going to make me feel like an idiot. Do you know you need to come down and visit us at some point. They started a film festival down here, which has gotten pretty big apparently.
Nice.
And you don't know what it's called. Arkansas. Can't remember what it's called. Let's look. I'll Google it. I got to Google it.
The Northwest Arkansas Film Festival.
Oh God, I hope it's not that freaking simple.
Please, please God, let it be that. That'll be awesome.
Oh, it probably is. Now I thought they had some kind of film. It's the Bentonville Film Festival.
Ooh.
From the BFF Foundation. I think that's what it is. Yeah, it's the Bentonville Film Festival.
There's an screenwriter that I'm mentoring right now, and there is a horror script that he's working on. That I'm just like, one of your goals is to make it to this particular horror Scream Fest film festival and submit that for the screenwriting contest. So I'm still looking at those. I'm not repped at the moment, although I think I could be at any time if I wanted to. But it's still fun. Indie film it's a very different scene from the indie author scene, but indie film is still a lot of fun.
Yeah, it looks like this is called the Bentonville Film Festival. It takes place between June 10th and June 16th in Bentonville, Arkansas.
I like the link where it says, learn more about boof.
Boof.
It almost says beef.
Beef. The Beef Foundation.
The Beef Film Festival. It's all about cows.
Oh, it reminds me of something funny I'm going to tell you when I'm not recording. I'll just do it right now. We're going to switch to the news. How about news? Woohoo!
Oh, smack your face, huh? See, that's the thing about South Park is their Mickey Mouse is amazing. It's like, oh, you better do what I tell you. Beat the crap out of your home.
He shows up in the Slave One.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, man.
Holy crap. So good.
Right, news. We are, you guys didn't miss anything while we were on break. It's fine. Someday I'll have to do outtakes. All right. Our first news story is Brando Sanderso. I mean, I think everybody's heard this story already, but we're going to make sure you've heard it. So Brando Sanderso convinced Audible to give a higher royalty rate to authors. Basically, he was like, hey, Audible, I don't think I'm going to let you have my new books. And they were like, wait, what? And he was like, y'all don't pay authors good royalty rates, so pass. And they were like, wait, what? And he was like, yeah, I ain't giving you my books. And they were like, bruh. And he was like, bruh. And they were like, bruh. And he was like, bruh. And then they were like, don't leave us, please. We can do better. And so apparently Audible is going to look at rolling out better royalty rates for indie authors and small publishers.
It was that Taylor Swift moment of please don't be in love with someone else, pretty much.
You're like, wait. You're going to what? You're going to go somewhere else with your audiobook?
I'm just amazed you got that word for word script there to pass on to us of how it went down.
Yeah, I was there. My people reached out to their people and got me the verbatim. You know, I've met Brandon. That's how he talks. Transcript. You know,
yeah.
You've met the Sandy.
Yeah, I've met Brando. That's how I introduced him. It's like, what's up, Brando?
I'm not gonna say that. Never mind.
All I can hear in my head is Brando when you said that. Brando.
He's got what plans crave.
I mean, what even are those? What even are electrolytes? It's the stuff that plants crave. But what do they crave? Brando. Great loop. Great movie.
I've met Brandon Sanderson. He was super, super sweet. I only got to talk to him for like 3 minutes or something, but yeah,
that's cool. Longer than I thought you were going to say.
Well, it was really funny. So what happened was, we were at a convention and we were coming off the elevators, getting ready to go to opening ceremonies. And I was with the big group. And so I was like trying to like, we had to kind of like walk into the swarm. And so I was kind of pointing and I was like, all right, there's my sister. There's blah, there's blah, there's blah. And I turned to my left and Brandon Sanderson's right beside me. And I'm like, there's Brandon Sanderson. And he turns and he goes, hello. And so we just walked down to opening ceremonies with him. And I was like, oh, I'm a big fan of yours. And he's like, oh, what's your favorite book? And I was like, I haven't read any. And he goes, how are you a fan of mine? I was like, writing excuses. And he was like, oh, okay. And then we just talked about writing or whatever for the way down to the thing.
That's cool. Is he done with that podcast pretty much?
I have no idea. I haven't kept up, to be honest with you.
It seems like he's done with anything that is not the brand of Brandon.
Yeah, I did see Phil was looking at a list of various things up for awards, and I did see it on that list. So, but I don't know if that's historical or what.
Gotcha. Well, what a kind gentleman. What a kind man to get better royalties for everybody. That's very nice.
Yeah, we'll see how it works out, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they can always just turn around and be like, we got him.
Then he releases 4 more secret books.
Yeah.
All right. The next one is kind of an interesting one. So the author Gabriel Garcia Marquez passed away in 2014. And before he died, he expressed that his latest book should be destroyed, not released. Apparently, his kids, I guess, initially followed that, and then they read the book and decided, oh no, we've got to publish this, and claimed he was struggling through dementia and memory loss. And I'm guessing, did they go ahead and publish it, or are they in the process?
Yeah, yeah,
did it say? Like, is it out now or no?
It's a good question.
Regardless,
oh, it's not the book to the left. Okay, it's not Ariel Crashes. Yeah. I'm like, no, what the hell?
No, that's an ad.
Okay.
Regardless, so the very last one by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, either coming out or already out. That's the one. So the interesting thing with this is, like, I feel like for an author, that's going to be a very personal decision. It's going to vary from person to person. It's like for myself, I have various novels that I've poured a ton of work into. They are, you know, ones I'm submitting, ones that are currently with editors. And if I were to, you know, pass away tomorrow, absolutely publish those. I think they are totally ready to go do them. I want them out in the world. Now, other ones that aren't to that stage, that are nowhere near ready, I'd probably say no. But again, this is just me. That's going to vary from person to person. And I think whatever that person's wishes are, it should be respected.
Yeah, I think their argument they're making was that they think because their father was dealing with dementia at the time, right, it clouded his judgment of his own work.
Right. But again, by the sound of it, he had already gotten that book to the point where, like, I would be saying, yeah, publish it. So I don't know. That one's tough because of the health issues involved.
Yeah, right.
That seems kind of crazy.
It's a weird, I don't know. I mean, it does. And in the sons even said, like, they're like, look, we know people are going to accuse us of doing a cash grab. We get it, but we feel like it's the right thing to do regardless. So
to fill our pocketbooks. Yeah, it's the right thing to do. People are going to accuse us of being a cash grab. You know what? They're probably right. But anyway, here's this book.
Do you know who had the most baller exit, though, right? Was Terry Pratchett.
Yeah.
Go on.
His is amazing. So Terry Pratchett had in his will that they take his hard drive with all of his unfinished manuscripts and run it over with a steamroller.
Dang.
And they did. And they took pictures and they put it online of the steamroller running over his computer.
Wow.
Yep.
I like that. I've kept a journal since 2005. And one of these days I have to print it all off and just burn it because it's just a very sad book. I don't think anybody should read it.
Oh, I feel the same way with mine.
Yeah. But no, I would agree. I would say, like, yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like whatever I have done is good enough to go. But, like, unless you're going to have, I don't know, Brandon Sandow finish the series, go for it.
Right. Yeah, that would be the other thing for me is if I have one that I was working on that wasn't quite ready. It's like, is there an author I trust to, you know, take over it from there and finish it the way I want it to be finished.
Absolutely.
But I was going to say another thing with that, especially with anyone accusing them of it being a cash grab. So like from their point of view, if it's just about this is a really good book and it should be out in the world, you could totally just self-publish that and put whatever price you want on it and then donate all of that to some sort of charity. So that way there's no profit involved. I'm just saying if you wanted to make that argument where it's like, no, we're not in this for money. It is literally about the book. Like there are options that would help you accomplish that to prove that that's all you're going for. Like you just want it to be about the book and everyone should read it.
Listen, lady, it's not about a cash grab, but
it's kind of a cash grab. It's when you're in the glass box and the fans blowing dollar bills everywhere. You're just trying to get it then, you know, that's really what it is. But this is the guy
I'm
who wrote.
They should.
This is the guy who did Love in the Time of Cholera, 100 Years of Something. Oh, what is it called?
Solitude.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Hmm. Right. I'm not saying that's what they should do. I'm just saying if that were a genuine concern and they wanted to prove that it's not, like, there are ways you can prove that, okay, yeah, it's not just a cash grab.
Right. Yeah. You just donate all the royalties regardless of whether it's trad published or indie. Right. You could just,
When I Googled Garcia Marquez, there is a picture that shows up and that picture is just a very stern, I know my dumb sons are going to publish my book when I die kind of look. It's like the picture just is like, boys, please don't do this, but you're going to do it, aren't you?
Yeah.
Just a dejected, disappointed expression.
Nothing better than the look of a disappointed father.
Hey, we're all authors. I think we know that feeling. Oh, shoot.
Well, I was going to add, there are examples of where I think that sort of thing worked out for the good. So Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time would be a good one. You know, he died before he could finish the series. Brandon Sanderson, who we've brought up already on this podcast today, but he was the one who finished the final books of that. And just speaking for myself, those final three were my favorites in the entire series.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, so that one I feel like is one, like, it's such a massive book series, a massive world, lots of things going on. And the thought of just ending with the last one that he wrote and not having that closure, like, I wouldn't want my readers to be left with that. Like, I'd want someone to step in and finish this for me.
It's kind of what Kevin and Brian did with Dune.
Yeah.
You know, right. Same kind of thing. Although I, It's funny, ever since he told that story about the Popcorn Theory one, all I read is nothing but hate for those books. Like, I haven't seen one nice thing about those books.
They do catch some flack for it. It's a weird thing, though. It's like, here's the thing, right? They catch some flack for it, but obviously, I think it's just like a small number of people who are very loud. Because they obviously sell enough that people keep publishing them, right? If the books weren't selling, if they weren't successful, they wouldn't be able to continue. So there's obviously a large crowd of people out there who like them and appreciate them. There's just some people are very loud.
It's usually the haters.
Yeah. I mean, unless you've done such a job that, like, the haters hate you so much that they buy, there's millions of them buying each new release so that they can tell you about it. In which case, good for Brian and Kevin.
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
All right. Less fun news story. Apparently, The Zon and BookWire are having negotiation disputes. And so BookWire's contract with The Zon expired. And when they went to make a new deal, they wanted a better deal. And The Zon be like, nah, bruh, we want the same deal you had before that we've had this whole time. And BookWire was like, bruh, have you seen this economy out here? We got to have a little bit better terms. And The Zon was like, nah. And then they just delisted their titles.
In this economy? Sheesh.
So that's where they're at.
How do you keep getting the scripts of these conversations?
I was there. I get invited to important meetings with The Zon. They have a ton. They're like, I'm like a consultant, basically.
I think the only thing you missed was the accent. Really was, hello, mein Zon. Can we have better deal? Ein besser deal, bitte? Bitte schön?
I delist your books.
And Bezos goes, nein. Nein, Blockenstocken.
Oh, I almost went Russian on that. Das Vedanya's BookWire.
Oh, I love corn.
But that's a wrong. Any hizzle, that's what's going on there. So that's a bummer for people who are published through or distributed through BookWire, because there's like 2,300 publishing companies that use them. That'd be fun to wake up to, be like, I'm a successful author and I sell a lot of stuff through BookWire. And then you wake up the next morning and you're like, I don't sell anything.
Oh, the fun of being an author, doing the fun job. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I don't know. Here's the thing. I don't know what BookWire is asking for. I don't know if they're being unreasonable. I don't know if The Zon's being unreasonable. I don't know if they're both just doing weird corporate negotiation things. Mm-hmm. But it's probably good that people challenge The Zon on occasion.
Absolutely.
All right, JH, you doing the voice or am I doing the voice?
I don't know.
I'll do it.
In our continued coverage of our robot overlords.
You sounded like a Dalek.
Yeah, tonight.
Exterminate, exterminate.
Nice. So apparently some authors, did it say how many or who?
Three.
Is it just random? Three
it's
authors.
Three,
all
and
right.
It says who right here.
All right, yeah, three authors, and I still don't see where their names are. Doesn't matter. They are suing NVIDIA over AI use of copyrighted works. So the fight continues.
Yeah, it's the same thing that we've been seeing. It's not really, I mean, it's news that it's NVIDIA that they're targeting, but it's the same old story we've been seeing for 3 months, 6 months, whatever it's been, where people are going, you know, stop it. Stop it. Apparently, NVIDIA's AI is called Nemo.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that.
Did you find it yet? Find Nemo. Sorry. Moving on.
I mean, that was a flawless delivery on your part and a failure on mine to be like, what?
Look, they're not all gems, all right? But you got to put yourself out there. Well, this is interesting because Craig had mentioned the other day that there are all these platforms that are like, you know, uploading books and trying to teach the AI to write in such a language. But at least the ones that I have tinkered around with, I haven't found a single one that does it. And this is the first one that, for me at least, names a platform that is actively taking copyrighted books without folks' permission.
Oh, so there's pending lawsuits against Meta and Google and basically all the giant companies. It is alleged that they're all using books and basically being like, we're just uploading crap. And the argument is whether they should or not. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any debate on whether they're doing it. Like, I think it's pretty well understood that they are. I don't even think they're necessarily denying it. They're arguing that it's fair use, and authors are arguing, publishers are saying that's not fair use. So there are some pretty major lawsuits. They've been kind of compiling them to get together. And it's just, I guess we're going to see where it goes, right?
How could it be fair use? Just because they said it is fair use and they hope that they don't check them? Or how does that work?
I guess they're saying it in the sense of, like, I'm not a lawyer, Nick.
You just play on TV.
I have not played one on TV even. I think their general gist is, like, they're paying for, somebody paid for the right to read that material.
Mm.
And they're uploading it based on that, which makes it fair use, I think, is sort of where they're at.
Shaking my head.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, when you really want the authors to win this thing, mm-hmm. they're not going to, but you kind of want them to.
Well, I feel like it's the same with Midjourney and Leonardo and Deep Dream, I think is what it's called. Like, all of those that, you know, they're taking other illustrators, other artists' work, and, you know, they've seen their work, like, in other people's AI-generated content. It's that same thing. It's like, shoot, how do you – it's going against Goliath in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and with the art one, it's going to get tricky. So we covered a story here a while back where they were mad because – so this person, I think Tor – it was Tor, I think, hired, somebody to make a cover. And if you've ever seen that process actually be done – and anybody who hasn't, you should go look up on, like, YouTube – book cover design and just watch it in, like, fast motion. And what you'll see, the way that usually they make covers, like, in our heads, it's like they draw a picture, they go get one picture and whatever. But in reality, it's like 30 or 40, 50 pictures sometimes that are all combined, right? And that's what it appeared this cover creator had done. But it turned out that one of the many images they used apparently was AI generated.
Mm.
And people were in an uproar over it. And it's like, there's a lot to be in an uproar about right now. I'm not sure this is the one, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't know. Have you been accused of using AI with your covers at all or even with your writing?
No,
I've gotten it for my cover. That's about it. And my guy is way out in Mongolia and he's like, I can record the whole time if you like and just, that's where I've gotten the most heat, but yeah, no AI over here.
No, my stuff's way too stupid to be accused of being written by a robot. A robot would do so much better. There's no way it could come up with the ridiculous, stupid jokes I have. There's no question my books are written by an idiot.
By Who Bender from Futurama.
I could get hit on the cover front at some point. I don't know. But my covers aren't like – I think my cover artist does a great job. They look really good, but they're not like crazy artwork-wise, right? Like they're – it's – the standard urban fantasy cover. You have a character in the center. She does some light tricks with the background and yeah. So, all right. Guess that's the news. That is an incredible Donald Duck. That is unreal. That is a talent I did not know you had.
Yeah, I do the occasional voice acting for myself and my daughter. That's about it.
That's amazing. Do the rest of the podcast as Donald Duck.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know what it was? Right. That was me using a fancy tool to change my voice to Donald Duck. And Donald Duck will be reading my books for Audible, in which case I'll get a higher royalty.
And then sued.
And then sued. Oh, shoot. Yep.
You could do Winnie the Pooh, though.
I could certainly do Winnie the Pooh.
Right, for tools this time, Nick's going to tell us about a dictation device he uses.
Yes, indeed. So part of my process now that I'm trying is to dictate more often. And I find that with a newborn and one on the way, that my time is pretty much gone to write. So the time that I do get, I find, is when I walk my dog, when either I'm just listening to Brandon Sanderson on 2x speed, or if I'm just taking my pup out for a walk, then this is really the chance that I get. So I did a couple of things, and here's the three tools for me. So Nick Thacker, has a bookcareerinayear.com. He's got courses on there, and one of them is about dictation. So I took that course, and from that course, I took a little bit of what he does for his process. So what I have is a H1 Zoom handy recorder, and it's, I think it's like $99 on the Zon, and I use that to just talk out the book effectively. So I have my outline. I'm a big believer in plotting things out, and I have essentially my outline, and I look at that, and I'll read through it throughout the day. And then when I go for the walk with the dog, I'll still have it on hand, but then I will record pretty much the roughest, crappiest, lousiest version of what that will look like. And so I use that H1 Zoom, and then the software I use to transcribe. In Kevin's book, he talks about hiring a transcript. So he records his and sends it to somebody. They listen to it. They type it all up. On the MacBook, there's an app called Aiko, A-I-K-O. And it's like 4 gigs. It's humongous, but it is transcription software. So I drop in the WAV file from the H1, and then that transcribes it. Everything I say, the open quote, close quote, exclamation mark, question mark, all that. It'll write all of that out. And then I take that, don't kill me, take it to ChatGPT, and I say, please correct this dictated text. And from that is my first draft. By the time I'm editing it, that's already draft number 2. So I've been trying this for about the last year and a half. It's mostly unsuccessful. It's mostly awful. Where it's like, John walked, John looked. Damn it, this is awful. No, delete that. Hold on. Like all those weird things happen, but the more I practice it, the better I'm getting. And I just had a great day on Monday where I walked the dog for 20 minutes. I got like 19 solid minutes. And I was just reading through it before we had this call. And I mean, the first like 7 paragraphs, I'm like, okay, that's actually not too bad. So the H1 Zoom, the app Aiko, A-I-K-O, and then Nick Thacker's dictation course. And then for the fourth one, I guess, Kevin J. Anderson and Martin Shoemaker have a book called Write Like a Dictator, I think. That both of those together is what has helped refine the process. So I'm just going to keep doing that. So far, so good. And it helps me to get a daily word counted of something. So that's my tools.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to go back and put some more effort into. And I was starting to get okay with it. Do you know what really worked really well for me? Is I like to write by hand. And so I would write by hand, and then I would read that. I was using the Dragon Anywhere software on the phone.
Yeah.
Because as you're spitting it out, it appears on the screen in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. And it'll do it correctly if you learn they have voice commands. So you can be like, you know, new quote, blah, 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 comma, blah, 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 period, end quote. You know, you can do all that. And so when you kind of learn those few voice commands you need, and then I was reading off a script by what I wrote by hand. And so I did that for like, I don't know, it was like, like a couple weeks I probably was doing that. And then I would, I got to a place where I was getting comfortable with it, where I could start adding things. So it almost became like another draft, where I could be like, as I saw the sentence of like, I don't really like the way I wrote that, I'd probably write it like this. And then I would say it the way I would write it. And it started getting me like more and more comfortable where I could, I think if I would have stuck with it, eventually I could have got to the place where I could have actually written with it.
Don't give up. Keep going.
I'll have to start over now. That was like 2 years ago.
You know, Dakota Kraut, when he came to Superstars, his presentation was, that's what he does. So he'll dictate for like 4 hours by his computer. He has like the Shure podcasting mic, he told me. And then he does Google Docs. The Google dictation is excellent. It's as you say it. It's very, very good. And that's how he writes now, is he sits at the desk and does it. So it's certainly a good tool in the tool belt.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a shot. I know a lot of people are very negative, but
you just, you have to give it a good, you have to give it a good try. Like, the people I talked to about it, Haley, I don't know if you're listening to this, but you were one of the people who said like, nope, I can't do it. Nope, I'm awful about it. I just swear the whole time. I'm like, that's part of the process of learning something new. Like, it's really, you have to, I didn't start to get even good sentences until the first 45 days of it. And even now, as I'm talking, those aren't even good sentences. But the point is, you just got to give it a good effort.
I was curious, if you know, you mentioned you were able to get, I think you said 19 minutes most recently. About how many words did you manage in that time frame?
Let's see. Per NaNoWriMo, which is where I track all of my stuff.
Nice.
Anticlimactic. For 19 minutes, it was 1,933 words.
that's a lot.
Really good.
It is.
Yeah.
That's almost 2,000 words in 20 minutes. That's amazing.
One thing that I've thought about toying with, so I'm a big fan of Chris Fox's 5,000 words per minute or per hour, whatever that book is. I mean, some people. Look, y'all got auctioneers where you're at too. Okay, those folks, if they start writing books, we're all in deep trouble. I have been toying with the idea of doing dictation sprints, and I wonder if that would. I wonder what that would do. So it's something I just thought of this like yesterday. But I think like, what about like a 5-minute dictation sprint where I really kind of know like what I want with the characters and what I'm trying to describe and like the different senses and all those different things. I wonder what that would be like. So that's something I'm going to try at some point. Because I mean, my goal is to get to 2,000 words a day. I'd like to get to that constant. And then my one rule is I don't write on Sundays, period. So 6, 8, 10, 12. So that's 12,000 words if I could do it in a week, you know? So we'll see.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just like you said, it's one of those things everyone seems so negative about it out the gate. And it's like, just try it. Don't be, and like, at least try the way I described where you write by hand or something. And then you're just reading from a script and you can kind of get used to it very quickly.
Well, so that was one of the things that I was doing to train myself was I was reading other authors' chapters as I would walk. And so that would kind of help me get into a mindset of using descriptive language, watching my adverbs, all sorts of things like that. So I think that's a great way to start, as well as even reading your own old work so you get a tempo for how you sound and what you're trying to say. I think that's another, you know, just another thing to try.
Yeah. I dig it.
I think another thing to keep in mind that it seems other people don't really remember when they're trying it, at least from the sound of it, is like when we try anything else, like we pick up a new hobby or craft. So like, say I pick up woodworking tomorrow, I am not making anything worth a penny on my first attempt. Like it's going to suck. And so this is based, even though it's still writing, it's so different that like you have to approach it the same way, I think, and expect that there's going to be some time where you're just going to have to keep working at it and get better at it as you go.
Yeah.
Like the same applies for, you know, picking up a new instrument or learning to draw or paint if you've never done that before, learning to cook for the first time. Like, I feel like this is going to be the same sort of thing, and you can't expect greatness right out the gate.
Did you all ever watch Adventure Time?
Yes. No.
Yes. Okay. Jay, you get it. Jake once said, dude, sucking at something is the first step to being sort of good at something. And that's what you made me think of when you just said all that. That's true. You have to suck first. You do. I mean, you just got to look at it that way. Like, this is going to sound terrible and this isn't going to work for a while. But at the same time, I think one reason why I push it so hard is that sometimes the hardest part for us authors is to just even get started. And I've gotten to a point where it's like, I'll be about to go to bed. It's like, can you do one sentence? Can you write one sentence before you go to bed? Like, can you do one more thing? Here comes the train.
Here comes the train right at the end of the segment.
I hear the train a coming. It's coming around.
No train ad. It's the end of the segment. We're finishing the segment. I'm going to save myself 20 minutes of editing.
Love it.
Segment. Oh, tool segment over.
And welcome back, everybody. It's
past the one to do that. These two were just geeking out about movies for like 10 minutes, and I was like, I probably should have just hit record and captured all that, but
I'm not an otaku, but we could talk anime for quite a while if you ever want to.
All right, so for Creatives on Fire this week, to start off on our writing topic, we're going to talk about querying agents a little bit, and I think JH should take the lead on that.
All right. Probably the least you need to know is, first of all, do your research. So know who represents your genre. Compile your own list. So whether that is in a spreadsheet, personally, I use Airtable. I just started using Query Tracker. And if you do the free version, you can only track one book at a time. If you do their premium, which is like $25 a year, you can track, I think it's like up to 20 books at a time. So if you've got that many at once that you're querying, like, I don't know, that seems kind of like you might have something going on. But anyway, so yeah, do your research first. You can Google, you can check out different sites like Writer's Digest or like they're, I think they're still publishing them. Like it's got the list where it's got like the huge like book of, you know, just all these agents and like their submission guidelines and their websites and all that stuff. So you can find those sorts of things. Also, if you do sign up for Query Tracker, it's got a ton of agents in their database. And you can just, you know, if you're a horror writer, just search for horror and all the ones who represent horror will pop up. And that applies to whatever genre you're doing. So yeah, so do your research starting off, compile your own list, go by whatever their guidelines are. So you can check their personal websites, their agency websites, see what their guidelines are, because some of them will, there are a lot of different things to track. So some of them will have it to where, like, if you're submitting to an agent at this agency, they pass the query around to all the agents at that agency. And so they'll have what's called like a no from one is a no from everybody policy. So you get a no on that book. That means the entire agency is passing. Do not query that book to that agency again. You can do a different book, but not that one. Others will be like, yeah, go ahead, send it to someone else. It's fine. So you can query the same book multiple times to all the agents there who represent your genre if you feel like it. So keep track of those things. Keep track of what their submission requirements are, whether that's just a query, whether they want query letter, synopsis, first chapter, first 5 pages, first 10 pages, whatever that is. I found one recently through Publishers Marketplace. That's another good resource. And she wanted an email and she wanted the entire book attached in the email. So that is very rare. And yeah, so just pay attention to those things. Do whatever they want you to do. And I guess this is another one that I've kind of noticed as I started using Query Tracker. Is that so? Query Tracker gives you the option to turn on a feature so that after 120 days, if you don't have a reply and you have this feature turned on, it will automatically close the query for you and mark it as no response. Or you can leave it open and leave it open as long as you want it to stay open, whether that's a year, 5 years. So at that point, it's probably a no, but you can kind of set your own date on when you want to assume it's a no and move on. And it's, a lot of the agents will put that like, oh, if you haven't heard from me in 8 weeks, it's probably a no. Or they might say, if you haven't heard from me in 8 weeks, send me a nudge or an email or whatever. So you want to have something that keeps track of all those little things so that you know, yeah, for this one, I need to follow up. For this one, it's a no. I need to move on with my life.
Nice.
Yeah, another cool thing with Query Tracker is if other authors are using it and they've submitted to that same agent, you can see what day they submitted, their word count range, their genre, and it'll kind of keep track of everyone's submissions. So like, you can go to that agent at any point in time, see their timeline and how many queries they've been getting, kind of figure out like, yours will be highlighted in yellow, but you can kind of figure out where the agent is in their list. If you're seeing like, oh, all these people are getting rejected, mine's coming up 3 down, I'm probably going to get some sort of response soon. So yeah, it adds a new element that I didn't have before when I was just doing it in my own database. I'm still doing both, let's be honest, but that adds a new way to data look freak. At it.
Data freak?
Yes. Well, it was also interesting was seeing how many people were marking their stuff as closed. Like they're either using the 120 days. Some of them had it as little as like a month or a week. And then they were assuming it's a no and moving on with life. Like, dude, you really think you're going to get a response in a week? Like, seriously? But
that
do you, I guess.
Is impressive.
Yeah, it did make me question because I was lingering as long as a year before I was like, okay, it's probably for sure a no. And it made me question like, okay, I should probably lower that a bit. I don't know what the right number is yet, but I'm still kind of watching it and trying to figure it out.
I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah. I mean, some of them, like I said, some of them will say after so long, assume it's a no, but others don't even have that. And it's those that I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the right time frame? Like, is it 6 months? Is it 3 months? Like Query Tracker was defaulting to? Is it something else? I don't really know yet.
I have one contribution to this, I realized.
Okay.
Where I thought I had no contribution because you just basically did a great job explaining it. And my only contribution is, maybe, just maybe, sneak preview, maybe there's someone who useful who will be on the podcast soon who might have an answer to that question for you.
Yes, I would definitely like an insider's opinion on that.
Dangle, dangle.
Yeah.
We're going to dangle, dangle teaser. Yep. What could that possibly mean? Could it mean that we're going to have a literary agent on the podcast soon? Maybe. It's not beef.
No, it's just some college burnout. It's okay. I was just going to say, like, for me, like, you have got to follow that first rule. I think that's when I was querying managers and agents, like, it was the slush pile. It was amazing how many people just didn't follow step one. Like, for the love of God, follow step one. Mm-hmm. However they tell you to submit, don't submit your horror script to the science fiction guy or to the romantic comedy lady. Like, make sure you are literally following what they say. I mean, I used to read back in the day, it was like a Query Shark blog of some kind. I can't think of what it was called, but like, it was this gal who worked at a big agency, and she had so many blog posts. I just started with, I threw it away immediately. It was because I didn't follow the standard guidelines. So
in this episode of Don't Be a Potato,
follow what they tell you to do.
If you can walk through life, listen, people, I'm going to get real with you for a moment. I've worked in a lot of places, had a lot of jobs. So have most of you. We've all worked different places. We've all done different things. And yet we act surprised when it's like authors don't do what they're supposed to do when they're submitting. Think about all the people you've worked with and think how many of them on a day-to-day basis were just walking potatoes, right? If you can just not be a potato, you will get ahead of the potatoes. In a bag of potatoes, be a yam is all I'm saying. You can just stand out. It doesn't matter if you're querying your books. It doesn't matter if you're working at the Taco Bell. You can be the head taco maker if you're just not a potato.
Yep. Yes. Yes.
That's a rock fact.
The president is naked.
I have to say, one of my favorite, you mentioned, one of my favorite memes ever is me every time I wake up in the morning, it shows yes. how to make a baked potato and just says, let the potato rest for 5 minutes. So you can rest as a potato.
Yes, sir, young man.
I was going to add to the query stuff. Two other things I would keep in mind was I would also come up with a routine for when you're querying. So my personal one is once a month. So once a month I'm sending out new queries. I would probably figure out if you want to have a certain number out at a time, or if you're okay with it just being random. So like, do you need to have 10 queries out of a time or 15? What is that number? What's the number that's comfortable to you that you feel like, okay, that's a good number to have out at once? And then how long do I wait before I send out the next batch? And then are you just like, are you doing that 10 to 15 every single time? Are you only keeping that total? So like, if you get 3 rejections, you're only sending out 3 new ones. So I would figure out all that stuff ahead of time. I would also keep track of if you're like me and you're submitting multiple books at the same time, come up with a really good system to track that. Again, I use Airtable. Query Tracker can also help you. But then decide, are you sending all those queries on the same day, or do you need 2 different schedules for sending the different queries of the different books? So, yeah, something to think about.
When you get those rejections, print them off, nail them to the wall.
Yep. Oh, mine would be covered. What did I say? I'm up to 407 now, 408.
Let the bricks that people throw at you be the foundation of your castle.
Speaking of the foundation of your castle, from a finance point of view for Creatives on Fire this week, we're going to talk about taxes because it's tax season. And this is where I feel it's very important to point out that we are not tax advisors. We're not even that smart of people. You heard my potato rant a moment ago. And if you try to sue me based on tax advice, I'm going to play this whole episode in front of the judge. And I promise you, the judge is going to be like, you shouldn't have been listening to this idiot. Did you not hear his potato rant a moment ago? It didn't make any freaking sense. He told you to be a yam. He told you to be a yam and you took tax advice from him.
I don't remember this Judge Judy episode.
It was on Night Court. So I think from a taxes standpoint, and we don't have to talk about it for long, but I just think it's really, really important. And it's one of those things that if you don't know, you don't know. When I started writing that first, I was very fortunate in that I, every year when you walk into my tax lady's office, the first question she asks is, has anything changed? And that first year that my first book came out, I was like, well, I published a book. And she was like, oh, then you need to sit down. And she was like, okay, now things are going to be different and I'm going to have to charge you a little bit more, but you're going to get more money back because now you have a business. And so she was very kind and went through with me all the things I needed to track and keep track, or everything I needed to keep track of and bring in. And I think it's important to take advantage of of that opportunity. It's a weird thing at first because people are like, well, am I doing something I shouldn't be? It's like, no, our IRS tax system is meant to encourage businesses, small businesses, even artists and those things, right? So it's a very legitimate way that the money you spend to create your business gets some back from that, right? But the key thing is have a good tax person, I think. I don't know if I would, this is something I would never myself branch out and try to do on my own. In fact, I did do my taxes on my own once before I was a published author. And the way that worked out for me was...
Went to jail.
went to jail. it wasn't that bad, but what did happen was like a few months later, I did it all online, did the stuff, mailed everything off. I'm like, nailed it. And like a month or two later, I got a letter that said, hey, you owe us like $80. And I was like, oh, I guess I missed something. Okay. So I wrote that check, mailed it off. And about a month and a half, 2 months later, I got something back from the IRS. It was like, we owe you $25. Here's a check. I was like, that's weird. So I went and I cashed that. And then like a month or two later, I got a thing like from the IRS. It's like, you owe us $43. Like, this is a weird game we're playing. And for the rest of that year, like every other month, like either I was writing them a check or they were sending me one. And I was like, never again, never again.
In the memo of the check you just wrote, no, you know,
right, tag. You're it.
Uno reverse.
But having a good tax person who understands and is willing to like take the 5 minutes to talk to you about what you should or shouldn't be tracking, very helpful. The closest I'll get to legal advice, because somebody actually asked me this today, that's not a writer, they have a small business, and they were like, could you show me how to do books and how you keep track of expenses and things? And I was like, cheat code, the IRS made it legal to use your credit card statements, so it takes me about 4 hours to do the whole year, because I have a credit card I specifically use only for my business stuff. And then at the end of the year, I just have to go sit down and go print, 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 print. And it says what it was for, who it was to. I categorize that. I keep track of everything. My personal thing is I'm pretty conservative. Like, I don't go crazy. And if I do get audited at some point or something, if there's questions, then I can turn around and be like, look, here's all the stuff I didn't send you that I could have. I know other people who will go, no, squeeze for every last inch. But I don't want to deal with it really. So that's my take.
It's a good take. This is the first year I've submitted a Form C, I think is what it was called. And I did it all myself. Who was it?
Look at you adulting over there.
I know. I need someone who's more of an adulty or adult than me most of the time. But I think it was somebody at the first Superstars that had me start like an Excel sheet, and it was just like tracking everything that way. So it was the same thing. Like I would use, I think it was Chase, the card, just I was marking everything over. And then recently I joined Blue Vine because I had an excellent recommendation from an excellent lady, and that's the one that I have now. And hopefully I'll get that card in the mail soon. It was something that I think a lot of people are nervous about for a really long time, because I think everyone's terrified of being audited or going to prison or whatever that could mean.
Yeah.
But to be able to put on my MacBook that I only use for writing, or just the Superstars fees, which I'll be able to put on for next year because I totally didn't track that last year. It's something that over the $20 parking ticket, I lose it. So here's something stupid about me. I lose a parking ticket every time I go to Superstars. Like, it's the one that you just swipe in and out to leave the garage. I lose one every time, so I always have to end up paying $20 for a lost ticket. But I'm gonna write that off next year. So I think that's, you really have to, if you're taking it as seriously as I think you should, and I think the people who are listening are taking this very seriously, take that time. Yeah. I mean, I watched a YouTube video of a German lady going through that Form C, and I just followed along with her. And she's like, okay, so for this column, you're going to do this. And I was like, okay, okay. And that's exactly what I did. And I went through my Excel tracker sheet, and I just started a calendar. My cousin also owns a business, landscaping, completely different. But I started a Google Calendar reminder for both of us the first of every month to go back through our statements and track everything again. So, and I'm new to it
too. That's a smart way to do it.
Yeah. So it was a really nice thing come tax season, but it wasn't nice, the fee for the form going through who we went through, but that might change next year. We shall see.
Yeah. I tried a new thing as well where I was using Airtable, and I would write down like the date, what it was, if it was income or an expense. And then if it was an expense, like, did I have a receipt for it? And then what I was doing, say it was an emailed receipt or a printed receipt, I would save that as a PDF and had a 2023 tax folder, and I would just drop it in there. So all I had to do was go in, print everything off, reference it back to my column of, okay, I got that receipt, and so on. And it worked really well this year.
Nice. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that hard. It's not that scary, he says, having not been audited. And I haven't been. Like I said, I gotta really trust my tax ladies. I don't think I will be. If I am, I'm prepared for it. We've got the stuff. I will say one of my former bosses, he always would give me a hard time about not claiming every last penny that I could. And I would be like, because you hear this thing that people say all the time, like, oh, every so many years you need to show a profit or whatever. Like, that's not like written down anywhere. That's not like a real. I don't think that that's a. That's just a thing people say. I don't know if there's any proof that that does anything. But my former boss would always say to me, I'd be like, dude, I need to. Like, I don't want to get too crazy, right? Because there's years where I don't sell that many books. And he would always go. This is what he. I pretty shouldn't even say this. The fuck is this? He always say to me. He'd always go. He'd go, dude. The government can't tell you that you have to be good at your business. And he's been audited many, many times. He's been audited where his accountants were like, you can't do this. And he'd be like, do it. I demand it. And then he'd get audited. And he's always won every time. And he just stands on that. Every time he has to talk to somebody, he's like, so you're telling me that the government is telling me I have to be better at my business.
I think it was Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, like famously, like for their accounting, it listed that they'd lost like $160 million or something because it was Hollywood accounting. Like they found a way to make it a loss, but that's a lot of Hollywood is even if you're like, this is a blockbuster. It's like, no, it's a loss. We lost money on the deal. And they from their mansions, jerks.
Oh, shoot. All right. Well, I think that's probably we've beaten the taxes to death, right? We've told them what they need to know.
Yep. Do them.
Do them. Do your taxes. Yeah. Don't not do them. Don't be like, I don't want to deal with any of that. That would be really dumb. And some people do, right? Some people will go like years and years and be like, wait, I could have been writing some. I don't understand what that means. Like, it means that the government was going to give you a break on your taxes because you have business expenses. So, like, I would pay less? Yeah. Oh, shoot. Get money back. We should have known that 20 years ago. So don't be that person. Yep. All right, Beef. Mm. Tell the people where to find you.
You can find me at nickwrites.net, NICwrites.net, because my name is definitely just NIC. There's no K, there's no H, there's no X. And I had a Facebook page, but I can't get it back. I have Nick Lejko, author extraordinaire on Facebook. And because I got hacked in December, I can't take back my author page. So I'm like, I keep claiming it as like not me. So I don't know. I think I might just make a new author page. But as of right now,
you should give it up at this point. It's not worth it.
You know, I think you're right. It was Jonathan Mayberry that got me back on Facebook anyway, but we'll see. But yeah, nickwrites.net. There's somebody I met at Katie Cross at Superstars, who's an amazing human being. She's like, just continue to drive them to your website. Keep working on that. Keep working on that. So I think number 7 on my list of 13 things to do, my 13 reasons why, number 7 is to redo my whole freaking website. And I have... can't see this in the background, but I got this in the mail, like Shopify, start your store for $1. I'm just waiting to do it. And then I'm going to start my Shopify Express store. And, my beta testing will be getting my paperbacks onto my website and start getting people away from the Xan. But I still really want to try the ebook success there. So we'll see. But yeah, nickwrites.net is where I'm at. And I'm also on the Tik and Talk and the Insta and those places online. Garbage. TikTok is a lot of fun though, but yeah, nickwrites.net. I'm there and I'm on everywhere else.
All right, Jamiroquai Hobbiton the Third.
Yeah, that's what it means.
I thought it stood for just have. Broken. Just have Fleming.
It's really Jabroni Hamlet.
No, it's not.
It's just Ham Fleming.
It's German. Ja, ham, Fleming.
Gosh, that reminds me of the have you guys seen the thing for J.R.R. Tolkien's, or is it, do they just make it all Tolkien?
No. Oh my gosh, real quick, there's a 4chan thing that they had where it was like Tolkien comes up with his characters for his books, and they're so good. They're like, I need a name for this hobbit clan, and they're proud of their feet. Oh, like it's so, I will send it to you on the Discord. It's so good.
Okay.
Sorry.
Back to serious stuff. Okay. You can find me at jhfleming.net. Shush. You can find me at jhfleming.net. I'm on all the social medias as jhfleming. You can also find me on Fiverr or my website if you need an editor. And you can find my band, Wildwood Minstrels, on all the music places.
All right. And I'm Philip Dreher Duncan, philipdreherduncan.com. And by the time you're hearing this, my new book will be out. And hopefully all the right people will have bought it. So now I don't care if you do. It is called Rebel Medicine. And it is available now when this airs. Thank you, Nick Lischko. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
They hear the sirens in the background. They are coming to get you.
Yes, they are. Go I ahead. Gotta run.
And that's a pod. Good luck, Nick. Run faster.